welcome to the Grand Cast, episode 3, January 28th, 2017. I'm your host, Chris N., and I'm here with Mike Nichols, a Grand Rapids comedy legend.
Stop.
This is the second attempt at recording episode 3, because we had done, I don't know, like 20, 30 minutes, and then my computer locked up. I don't know if it overheated or what was going on. So we're trying this again without the video component to see if that might have contributed to the problems we were having. So, since a lot of people are probably going to be hearing this for the first time, I'm going to go over what the Grand Cast is, starting with the mission statement, which I have in front of me this time. It won't be improvised. The purpose of the Grand Cast is to explore the comedy scene, specifically improv, in Grand Rapids, Michigan, as it exists in the year 2017 through a series of one-on-one. I have interviews printed, but I'm going to say conversations, because when I improvised it, I came up with conversations, which seems like a better word. So
it's amazing what can come out of improvising, isn't it, Chris?
Yeah, maybe I should improvise more.
Maybe you should. That's what everyone wants.
Yeah. And then I have 3 goals here. First one is to record 1 1-hour plus long episode per week. Initially, I was thinking it would just be 1 hour. But based on the last 2 of these that I did, it goes way over. We just get into conversations and it ends up an hour and a half, 2 hours. Which is not a bad thing. Like, I enjoy all of it. The second goal is to post new episodes weekly in audio and video format. Probably not video, given the technical
given that the guest is Mike Nichols, and who wants to look at that?
I do.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing they can't see how we're really sitting right now on each other's laps, staring into each other's eyes deeply. Sharing the same mic. And when I say mic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean.
Penis. And the third goal is to make at least one person's day better through the creation of quality content.
Right after you say that, you then end with that line, and quality content for our listeners. Cool. Here we go.
I'm going to answer these for you because I already know.
Yes, please.
Your favorite color is Lincoln Green.
That's right. Yeah, it is.
Yep. You've been doing comedy for about 11 years, mm-hmm. seriously, like in an organized format. Mm-hmm. A little bit in high school before that, some sketches. You started at Central Michigan University with Ryan Lathrop,
mm-hmm.
Who did the very funny date night with Mike and Ryan.
Yes, that was a lot of fun. I do miss date night with Mike and Ryan.
On Monday at Dog Story Theater, there is date night with Ryan and Angelica.
Is that what it's going to be?
That's the what's happening Monday. And there also is going to be an improvised sitcom with Late Night GR, one of the improv troops that I'm... I've run an unofficial fan club for them.
Mm-hmm.
We doubled our membership last night, so that's pretty exciting.
The fan club?
Fan club doubled its membership last night.
Did someone from Late Night GR join the fan club?
No, one of your former roommates, Chris, also another Chris.
Oh, Chris Emery, yes.
Yeah, so yes, we have 100% Chris's in fan club right now.
Good. I kind of only want there to be fan clubs with people named Chris in them. It just...
kind of like, limits your audience, but sure.
It almost is like, it does seem a little scary too. It's like, hey, we have a fan club. Hey, did you notice that everyone in the fan club is named Chris? What? It does sound like the start of a strange South Park episode.
I'd watch that.
Mm. Oh, who wouldn't? South Park's great.
Fantastic show.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly my favorite television show.
Really? That's South Park's your favorite television show ever?
Well, I have a lot of favorites, but I think consistently for the last 10 years they've been doing really good work.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. It's got social commentary. Some of it's thought-provoking. And there are certainly fart jokes and things of that nature, but I don't think that's bad.
No, and sometimes it's actually part of the satire. It's showing like the crudeness of some of the things that happen in our society. Yeah, is that the chair squeaking?
Yeah, I need to like glue them or something.
Well, we're sitting on the same chair, so
it's
what's causing that squeaking? Might
be approaching the maximum weight for the.
How dare you? but no, yeah, South Park's one of my favorites too. I haven't laughed as much with the last couple seasons. Like it definitely has felt more social commentary than humor lately. But you know, it's still enjoyable to watch, and I still find it interesting. I still think it's one of the best shows of the last, you know, 15 years.
Yeah, it's no The Simpsons, but they already did
everything. It did a whole episode about that. Simpsons already did it. That was fun.
Yep. All right. So now we're getting into questions that I don't already know the answers to. What is your favorite coin? Like a currency coin?
You just want me to say a nickel, don't you?
Is that your favorite coin?
Because my last name is Nichols, so I meant to say that my favorite coin is the nickel.
I'm wondering.
You know what? Yeah, I'm going to go with that one.
Hmm.
Mike Nichols' favorite coin is a nickel. It's got Thomas Jefferson on it.
Good president.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not top three, but...
I mean, he was the third, so he would technically be top three.
Yep. What is your favorite base metal?
What is my favorite base metal?
Mm-hmm. Like the element of
metal. Is this a trick to know? Like, does Mike really know his base metals? Like,
no, I'm fishing for a specific
base
metal. That might also be a component in a currency coin.
I like nickel. I really enjoy nickel as a base metal.
That's my favorite, too.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Aww.
We have so much in common.
I know.
What is your favorite Canadian rock band? Specifically, jock rock style.
What is it? Nickelback? Is
that
the... Damn.
Nice.
You just made me say my favorite Canadian band was Nickelback.
Mine, but too.
You know what? I'm just going to say yes to the game we have going here, and I'll play along. I'm wondering what else we have. Who's my favorite villain from the film The Fugitive? Charles Nichols.
Oh! I didn't have that.
That's Harrison Ford, yeah.
Good movie.
Who was my favorite? Oh, no. Nope. Probably shouldn't go there with it. I'm trying to think of other people with the last name Nichols, and I thought of the Oklahoma City bombing. I was like, ooh, no.
Favorite terrorist executed within the past 15 years? Terry Nichols.
Yeah.
Probably.
Definitely. This is getting dark.
Yeah. What do you like most about improv comedy?
Terry Nichols.
Whoa.
Okay. What do I like most about improv comedy? I think improv comedy is one of the... And really just like improv in general. Whether it's like dramatic improv or, you know, comedy improv or, I don't know, maybe scene work improv. But I just think it's the most like rawest form of creativity in some sense. Like you literally kind of have nothing to go with. And then you take like your energies, your posture, your human experience, and you just turn it into an entire world. You know, I've been part of improv scenes, and I've seen improv scenes where, like, I literally felt like someone just created a whole planet and right on that stage, and I could like see it. You know, you could just feel it right there. And then the scene was over, it was gone, and I was like, "Wow, they had absolutely nothing. They did that just with their bodies and with their mouths and with like a chair." Like, and it's so powerful to watch, and it's especially powerful when it can make you laugh. And so I guess the answer to your question of what do I love most about improv comedy is that you can literally do anything with it. Like, what else can you say you can do? You can almost do anything with it. It's like, well, with this, you can only, you know, a hammer only is going to probably do two things for you. You're going to be able to hit something and maybe pry something out. With improv, it's like, hey, what can we create in the stage? Anything. We can create hammers that talk and are named Jeff. And Jeff and his friend Dave the Saw are talking about going to a pool party. Like, and then we can, oh, okay, now we're going to do something else. Oh, now we're on a planet where every tree is really going to melt into lava in every 5 seconds and then be reborn every 5 seconds. And Sharon and Molly are stranded. How will they get off? You know, it's like you can just do anything you want. And I think there's few art forms, maybe no other art forms, that can just give you that ability to do it in the way that improv does. I mean, yeah, when you have a blank canvas, you can paint whatever you want on it, or you can, you know, do it with a computer screen too, in a sense. But improv is like you kind of is you doing it. I think that's really special.
Yeah, there's the only limits like your own imagination and creativity.
Mm-hmm.
What do you dislike most about improv comedy?
Well, Chris, to be fully honest, everything that human beings do is going to get slightly distorted and corrupted and a little bit ruined just because it's humans doing it. Because my sister one time said something that stuck with me, and I've never thought of, it's something I still think about, like, maybe once a day. And that's, like, the great tragedy of a human being is that human beings don't really want what's good for them. And that stuck with me a lot this year. She said it to me, I think, like, last summer. Or summer 2016. So, when it comes to improv, you know, it's great to get, it's like, you know, it's, the art form is beautiful. You can on stage do whatever you want, and then you have to deal with other people. And sometimes other people are not always that great to work with. Sometimes other people are selfish or stupid or, you know, not very imaginative, or they're not good. They're just not listening well to you, or, you know, they're in some ways inhibiting the creative flow of improv. And then you have to also acknowledge the fact that you are also a human. And so sometimes you're stupid, and sometimes you're selfish, and sometimes you inhibit the flow of someone else's creative improv, because you're two people on a team trying to do it together, and your team is made up of imperfect people. So it's going to have a team with flaws, because you have flaws, and so do they. Yeah. So everyone, I think,
has a weakness.
Yeah.
Multiple weaknesses.
Yeah, and sometimes your weaknesses can really come out on stage. One of the last things I said in the last workshop I did before I went to Austin, and then, you know, everything stalled, and now I'm back for a bit. But one of the last things I said in the workshop was, I want to end it with this, and it was, someone had asked me, like, what do you think of my improv? And I told them, well, and this was a long time ago, I was like, I think your improv is like your social media. It's your posts are very, very funny sometimes, very pointed, but also sometimes very attention seeking, and very, very cold. And then it's like, when you talk about everyone, this, like, when I hear you, like, say judgmental thing, like, we're at a party, I hear you say judgmental things, or I hear you talk down about something, or just, like, be mean about someone, and then you get an improv stage, it's like, why should I expect that you might not just, like, not support me? Because I've seen you be unsupportive and be negative and be rude before. Or, like, I've seen you just get really angry and lose your temper, or just, like, post about how angry, like, you know, you're so upset about this and this and this issue. And even though I might agree with you, like, you know, all that, sometimes, like, all your energy is just a little out of control. And what makes you think that when you're going to get on improv stage, suddenly you'll have full discipline and control over yourself? It's like, you know, you bring stuff onto an improv stage, and sometimes, you know, when the thing I just said about a hammer, I didn't create a hammer on that stage. A hammer is a real thing that I just did. I put it into a scene. I brought it out there on that stage with me. I'm bringing something off the stage and putting it on the stage. And yeah, you can do that with a lot of good things, like your own energy and your positivity and your own imagination. You can also do that with your selfishness, your neediness, your attention-seeking nature sometimes. And I've brought those things on a stage too. So yeah, I think the worst part about improv is when you're doing it with people that can really frustrate you sometimes. And or when you're that person who's frustrating everyone. And I've had both experience where I'm the problem or when other people are the problem, and both are humbling.
Yeah. I found it can be very difficult in the moment to recognize that you're the one who's being the problem. And then once you get some distance, you get some perspective on how you are behaving, you kind of start to see like, oh, I was being a dick. I was being an asshole. Like, I didn't know it at the time. And it just takes that that distance to get the perspective on the mistakes that you had been making.
2 years ago, I went through a really, really rough breakup. And, like, the day we had, like, the kind of final falling out where, you know, we never really wanted to speak to each other again. I, like, you know, I was, like, an hour before improv practice. And I showed up at where we were practicing with no outlet. And I was just a wreck. And it was not a fun practice for anyone because of my behavior. And I didn't realize it, but I was carrying on with it for, you know, probably about a month or so. And yeah. Aaron Becca finally like pulled me aside and was like, hey, you want to grab coffee? And was like, kind of, you know, told me, hey, like you are kind of not being yourself lately. And you're kind of, you know, just kind of messing up the energy and stuff. And just pointed out a couple, like, remember when you did this in that scene, remember this, like, da, da, da. And I was just really broken about it. I felt really terrible and, you know, I was sad and, like, and angry at myself for, like, a week. And then she's like, no, like, stop. Just get back into it and just, like, start having fun again. And so, yeah, like, I can totally attest to everything I've just said is, like, yeah, I know, because I was the problem. Like, yeah, I've been the problem. Like,
I've walked that path before, yeah. So I can recognize when others are following a similar path.
Mm-hmm. It's like, gee, how do you know I'm making a mistake? Because I've made all of them twice, at least, guys. Like, just trust me. Is someone trying to be let in? Or is that the...
Those are the radiators.
Oh, okay.
Sorry about the background noise. It's winter, and the heating system in this apartment is terrible and loud. Hopefully it turns off soon.
Let's hope your landlord doesn't hear you bashing this great apartment, Chris.
Man. Well, it's like 100 years old, so... It's got its problems. And they messed up the heating system because it worked fine before.
Ah. Well, yep. I feel very comfortable.
Yeah, other than the noise.
Mm. And, like, having to talk.
And,
you know, the fact try to be interesting.
On your lap.
But yeah, that's
maybe
true.
Maybe that is
yeah.
not a problem. I don't know.
I know. It's amazing that we switched from I was on your lap and now you're on my lap and...
That's what all the squeaking in the chair was. That was not switching, but I like it. All right. Next question. Is this an intervention?
So the reason he's saying that is because I think I messed up the time. I thought you said you'd come 3, and I thought, for some reason, I thought 2. And you texted me like, hey, we're still on for 3, right? And I was like, oh, I was actually about to head out the door and come over. I guess I'll wait. And you're like, no, I'm not ready yet. I just like, I'm still preparing. And then I just had this feeling of wait. Like, he's making me wait. He's like, is this an intervention? Are there going to be a bunch of people that just show up and are like, Mike, we're worried about you. You said you were going to Austin. Now you're back. What's going on? You don't come to anything anymore. You don't want to see people. You're depressing looking. What's going on? So is this an intervention?
I asked you.
I've never had an intervention. I probably could have used one, like, earlier in January when I got super down. Should I just tell the story?
If you want to, it's up to you.
I'll just tell the story. So,
would you like more water?
And we might need a harder substance for this.
Oh, do you want a beer?
Yeah, sure. What you got?
We got All Day IPA. We got, I have a Stone Enjoy By February 14th. which is a chocolate coffee IPA.
I think I'll just have an IPA. Are you going to have one? Have one with me. Let's do this together. Come on, man. Be cool.
Peer pressure.
Yeah.
I had too many last night, but
hair
the dog. That's the thing. That's science, right? Where you have beer to get over a hangover.
Yeah, I've heard of people doing that before. Does it work?
I don't know. Let's find out.
Let's find out.
This is science.
All right.
So this is going to be a few minutes. Actually, you start. You wanted to tell the story. I'll get the beer.
That way
we don't just have like 30 seconds of.
I'll just tell the whole tragic, stupid story. So, I left my job at the Grand Rapids Business Journal to take a new job. And then, unfortunately, like right before I was supposed to start that job, the whole thing kind of fell through. So, for the first time in my life, I was at a point where I was like, "Well, like, what do I want to do with myself?" And so, then I decided I wanted to go to Austin, Texas. I kind of wanted to get out of Grand Rapids. I love this city. I've put a lot of my heart and soul into this city and trying to do good things for it. But I was ready for something new, ready to start to, you know, following the dreams and career pursuits that I wanted. So people were very gracious and threw me a bunch of goodbye parties, and I said goodbye to everyone, and I left all the improv teams I was on, and and got on a plane and went to Austin, Texas. And then I was there sleeping on a blow up air mattress in my wonderful sister's one bedroom apartment. I'm looking for jobs and doing interviews, and unfortunately, nothing was happening. It was getting really worrisome because at this point I hadn't had a job in a while and money was getting low. And then I had to fly back for Christmas because we were going to, you know, my sister and I both kind of had rough years. And so we wanted to be with our family for Christmas. And it was going to be one of the first time that all of us were together for the first time in a long time. So I flew back up for Christmas with her. And then she had to go back for her job, and she was like, you know, actually my family kind of talked to me, and this was maybe the intervention. They were like, you know, you really don't have any money anymore, and traveling is going to be tough for you, and like it's winter. Maybe you should think about just settling down here at mom and dad's and, you know, save on money and get a temp job just to start rebuilding your bank account a little bit before you come back to Austin. Because, you know, you can't just, you know, two of us in a one-bedroom apartment where you're sleeping on a blow-up air mattress and taking up the whole living room. She totally would have let me save her, but it was just getting cramped. And so I was like, okay. So I listened to my family, and I decided I was going to stay put. And that was extremely hard to accept because I said goodbye to everyone. I got in a plane. I left. I wasn't planning on coming back. And all of a sudden, things didn't work out the way I wanted, and I felt like a failure, and I felt like I had failed to be successful. And then I was back 29 years old, living at my parents with no job and no money, and I'm not doing anything with anyone, like comedy wise or professionally for fun, or just even, you know, to hang out with people, because I had said I was leaving, and I now felt ashamed and embarrassed that I was back. And I felt like I had let people down. I felt like I'd let myself down. I felt like it was all my fault for not maybe planning this well enough, maybe not, you know, leaving at the right time. Like, why did I leave right before I knew I had to come back for Christmas anyway? You know, it was just all this stuff where I just felt like a total failure, partly because I kind of was a total failure. And then I didn't even leave the house for like the first week of January. I didn't really even leave the house, let alone like my bedroom. I think there were a couple days where I didn't even leave, like just to go to the bathroom. But like if I ate, I just ate in my room, or, you know, I just didn't eat because I wasn't hungry, because I had no appetite, because I was deeply depressed. And it was like the first time I think I ever really had depression. Like I've definitely gotten moments where, like, you know, when a loved one died, there was like a couple weeks of like depression or a little bit of sadness, or when things didn't work out, you know, maybe that breakup, you know, I definitely was going through a hard time. But I don't know if I was like as depressed as I was this January, a couple weeks back. Like I was getting a little worried for myself, because I was like, boy, I've never felt this low and this, like I just feel like my whole world collapsed. Like I don't have my friend group feels like it's gone, and my work is gone, and like my, my plans for my future are gone, and it just felt like I was grieving for the entire life that I thought I was going to have, and the entire life that I was giving up to leave anyways, and now both were just gone. Not that I came back and people weren't being nice to me or anything, or, you know, anyone gave me crap about it, but I was giving myself crap for it. And if someone had been like, oh, I guess you weren't so great in Texas after all, like, I couldn't have said anything back to it, because it was like, yeah, that's true. Like, you didn't succeed at all, man. Like, and it had been like all this hype that like, oh, Mike's leaving and it's like a big deal and we all need to say goodbye to him. And I didn't really feel comfortable. I mean, I appreciate it, but I didn't really feel comfortable. I think I was very open with people. Like, look, I don't really think I was that important. I think maybe the role I played was important for helping people in Grand Rapids with improv, but I don't think I was important. If I hadn't done it, if I had never been born, somebody else would have done it. Like, someone else would have stepped up and taken that role. And
I don't think they would have.
Well, I mean, maybe we'll never know.
A huge catalyst of the growth and improvement of the Grand Rapids improv scene. And it's probably selfish of me, but I'm glad that you're back in town. Like,
it's like, well, I'm kind of glad it all failed for you, Mike. Like, nice having you around.
Not like that. I mean, mm-hmm. You know what I mean.
I know. I'm just
teasing. I do hope that you get involved back in the comedy scene, because you're a very talented improviser and very funny. And
I just don't know that it's for me right now. Like, because I don't want to stay now. It's not like, well, you know, this moving to Austin, you went, but now you had to come back because it kind of fell through on you, which I didn't realize actually has happened to a number of people. Like, I felt like I was like the only person that ever screwed up this bad, and then like a number of people were like, oh, I did that when I tried to move to California or Chicago. And I was like, oh, really? And I guess until you live through it, you don't really know how depressing and discouraging it really feels.
Yeah. Well, I moved back to Grand Rapids in 2012, and for a year I was living with my parents, like just saving up some money and paying off some debt.
Yeah, that's what's going on right now. I just started a job it's mostly a temp job, but I think it's going to turn into something more. You know, they're nice people. It's not paying a lot, but you know, it's paying some bills. That's what I need right now. And it's fairly non-complicated work and everyone's really nice. So I have, you know, no major complaints. But yeah, you know what else was weird about it? It was hard because you didn't really know how to talk about it with anyone, because it was like, I felt like if I told anyone how I was really feeling, it was just going to come across as whiny or as ungrateful or as like self-centered. And maybe it was, but it was like, everything I was doing in my life 1 year ago is totally gone now. Like the job I was doing, the career I had, the place I was living, the home, you know, the home I had, all the things I was involved with improv and coaching and comm, and all of that's gone. And most of my close friend group, like outside of improv, like you know, we're all still friends, but they've all kind of gotten married now and they're all kind of focusing on other things in life, which is totally good. And I'm very happy for them, but it's just kind of a different direction and space that I'm in right now. And now it's like, oh, like everything that was in my life that I valued is now gone, kind of.
The comedy scene is still there. Like,
yeah, but I think my place in it is done. I don't really, like you said, like, well, do you want to go back to
there for anyone, really?
Yeah, but like, so I haven't gone back to comm because, first off, like, there was the whole feeling embarrassed and ashamed and like kind of like, what is Mike still doing here? Like, isn't he gone yet? Like, and again, no one's done that to me. Well, maybe one person kind of did it, but no one's really made me feel that way except for mostly me and my own like kind of feeling crappy about myself. But in another sense, I didn't want to be there because like I didn't want it to feel like I was hovering. Like, I was like, okay, like, here, like, I'm not gonna be there now, my input, my influence, like, it's over. Like, and now it's like, oh, just, well, everything failed, so now I'm back and I want like my old job back and give me all this like attention and authority and stuff. And I don't really want to do that and make them feel like I'm hovering or micromanaging or trying to like get some kind of, like, I don't really want to take charge of it anymore. It's like, yeah, it's not my responsibility now. And like,
you can still go and be an audience member and see it from the other side. see my perspective on the comedy scene for a little while.
Maybe. I guess that's a possibility, although I don't know, I just don't really want to yet.
It's fair.
I mean, especially with, like, sometimes it's just nice to not have to deal with anything, like,
yeah, like, you know, when you're starting something new.
Yeah.
Getting used to a new job and
right.
It's a new situation.
Yeah, or just like, you know, I think we had talked about that, like, you know, that Facebook thing that happened, and it was like, remember last night?
I had a lot of alcohol last night, which impacts my short-term memory.
Well, there,
and I was in a car accident yesterday, so I might have.
You were in a car accident yesterday?
I was. My first car accident ever.
Why are we talking about me? What in the world? You're the interesting one. What's going on? Are you? Well, first of all, are you okay? Like, yeah. You seem okay. You don't have any cuts I'm not seeing? Or, okay, no, so you're physically fine?
I'm, as far as I know.
What happened?
Well, yesterday it was snowing, and it was still, like, warm enough that the roads were pretty much clear everywhere, except on overpasses. And I was going out to Zeeland. Like, I drive quite a lot for my job. Offices all over Michigan. So I was driving out to Zeeland, and at the on Highway 96 by Chicago Drive, there's, like, a pretty big, like, curve.
Mm-hmm.
And it's elevated, so I guess it freezes before any other parts of the road.
Yeah.
Because the rest of the roads were pretty much clear.
I don't know if it has to do with water running down, like, because it melts. But
yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know the science behind it, but
yeah. I didn't even know that nickel was a base metal until
I had to look that up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was driving a big cargo van, which is pretty heavy, and just going down the road, and there had been a truck in the ditch already that I went past. So I was not driving, like, extremely fast, maybe like 55 or 60 when the speed limit's 70. And that was pretty much what traffic was doing. And the back end of the van just slid out, like, from behind me. And I was in the right lane, and then just started sliding to the left and went straight into the guardrail. Like, I had no control of the van. It was just sliding.
Yeah.
It was ice.
That's scary. Were you, like, how's the vehicle? Is it okay?
No.
Totally totaled?
Not totaled. It went straight into the guardrail. For whatever reason, the airbag didn't go off, even though I hit pretty hard. And then the van, like, bounced back and did a 360 and then went back into the guardrail front first.
That could have been a lot worse. You're very lucky, yeah.
Yeah, very lucky that there weren't other cars around.
So, yeah, just, it sounds like it was just you. No one else.
There was one other car that I think they did almost the same thing, because that was probably like 300 yards further down the road. Like, she was on the side. The side of her car was all smashed up. And then she was facing the wrong direction. And I ended up, like, when the van came to a stop, it was kind of angled back looking at traffic, but against the guardrail. And there was already, like, a road commission guy and a cop who were, like, right there because of the other accidents. There was, I think, 7 or 8 accidents within, like, a mile.
Wow.
Like, just that stretch.
That's a bad spot, then.
Yeah. I don't know if it's, like, a poorly designed, like, the interchange is weird, that it ices up that badly. But the tow truck driver said, like, that spot is always accidents there.
So you have never been in an accident before this?
No.
Like, not even, like, oh, someone rear-ended you or someone hit you or...
No.
Nothing.
The closest... My mom backed up into a mailbox one time. But that...
Oh, wow. Brutal.
Yeah.
Wow. So how does that... How do you feel right now? Like, was it like, right now, whoa, I'm like,
over.
Was that why, though? Did you need a couple drinks to, like, kind of... I just need a drink right now, like, just to calm down, or did you feel...
No, like, I went back to the office and had some calls to still do, like, remote support stuff. Right after, the adrenaline was just, like, surging.
Yeah.
Like, for a little bit, it was just, like... it felt surreal, like, at mm-hmm. the time. It was just like, is this really happening? And then, like, the guy, the road commission guy showed up. He's like, are you fine? Like, are you hurt? And he's like, I'm fine. Then once the adrenaline started to wear off, it was just like a wave of emotion, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was difficult to not just like start crying, even though like I was fine. And
yeah,
it was just like a very intense experience.
I know you guys can't see it right now, but Chris has actually has tears streaming down his face from both sides, and Chris. Had those been your last moments, mm-hmm. who would you have wanted to talk to? And what would you have wanted to say?
I would have been really angry that I wouldn't make it to the Mike Nichols interview. It's like my first real chance for a one-on-one with Mike. And
yeah.
Blew it.
Yeah. Definitely clear to see that you have your priorities lined up.
Yeah.
You know, I think my life has been like a car wreck this so I was like trying, how do I get it back? Well, yeah, man, I'm glad you're okay.
That's, yeah, me too.
Car accidents are scary.
Yeah.
I had another thought for you.
Oh.
Another reason why I don't want to really go back to comm. Because
another excuse?
Is that... No, they're not excuses. They're real reasons. because I also don't want to be Jay Leno. Who like, okay, Conan, the Tonight Show is yours now.
Sean
yours
Francis,
now.
You're out.
Yeah, like, I don't want to do that to Aaron and Sean. It's like, no, like, I left. I intended to leave. If I didn't end up in Austin, that's not on them. So I can't just, like, go back and be like, okay, well, let me back. You know, that's...
No, you can't do that.
No, I don't want to do that. That's Jay Leno-ing it, and I don't have any interest to do that to them.
You can be an audience member. You can join Beer City Improv. They're always looking for talented comedians. You have options.
That's nice, and I do appreciate all the friendliness that is kind of being shown, but you know, I just,
as the unofficial fan club president, I would strongly support your involvement in any of the groups that I'm
well that's in. Nice. I'm not sure how much fun people would have watching it though. Like, it's like, this guy left. Like, what the hell? Like, why is he back? Like, that's...
What? I don't think anybody thinks or feels that way.
Eh.
As,
I don't think I'm as popular as you think I am, Chris.
I think you're more popular than you think you are.
Well, either way, though, I hope it's all going well. You know, I hope everyone's doing great. I want people to succeed. I want there to be opportunities for, you know, Calm to keep being like a... Like an awesome safe space for anyone to come in and do comedy. You know, I want everyone just to, you know, keep performing their craft and to get along. That's all I want. It saddens me when they don't get along. It's like, oh, guys, come on. It's just, it's improv.
I think a lot of it's just people are younger. They don't have the life experience, the perspective.
There was some fun stuff I got to like do in Austin a little bit with improv. Not I mean, I wasn't there long enough to really, you know, join anything or get to be a part of anything, but I did take some people out for drinks and had nice talks with them. One guy I actually called up this week because I just wanted some advice for, like, you know, how to deal with certain like things I was seeing, and I was like, you know, I don't want to get involved, but like I want to support my friends, and you know, what do I do? And he kind of really recommended that Every team needs a coach. He was like, get coaches and get good coaches. Like, get people that aren't as new as like someone who's only been doing it for like a year or something like that, which is tough then. Cause I'm like, well, boy, like, you know, I coached FDA and I coached Planned Parenthood, but I've really had no formal training. Like, I've never really taken an improv. I've never taken an improv class. I've been to a couple workshops here and there, and I've gotten to go see good shows and be a part of stuff. But I have no real training with improv. Like, I probably shouldn't even be coaching. Like, it's, and then I was thinking, like, well, who else is in town? That I was like, boy, like, there's not a lot of people in town that are, like, at the level he thought, like, quality coaching would come from. I was like, there's not a lot of people in town that would even meet that standard. Like, I mean, we have some good improvisers, and we have some people that are very, that have good teaching skills and stuff, but we don't have a lot of real, like, solid professionalism. We have some, but... You know, no one in town is doing improv full time, I don't think. Like, if they are, props to them. But, you know, I just think it's all so new still, and we're all so green. And even those of, like, even people, oh, well, Mike's really experienced. Yeah, but Mike's never even taken a class. Like, so I'm really not that experienced. And I'm not that well trained. So, you know, I just think everyone just needs to get as much training and experience under their belt as they can and just give each other space about it. But if we could find someone to, you know, if we could find a way to get every team a coach, like, I do think that would help. Just, even if it's just like an outside, I'm not going to perform with you. I'm just going to offer my thoughts as I watch you guys on like what I'm noticing. I think that would really help a lot of teams, probably including No Outlet, you know. But it's hard to say because I'm not there anymore and I don't see anyone doing anything anymore. So can't really judge.
That was actually one of my questions. Well, it's not even a question. It was, tell me about being an improv comedy coach.
Oh, like coaching FTA and Planned Parenthood?
Yeah.
FTA was really fun and really special. And, you know, and there was a lot of help that came from Sean Francis and Amy Gaskin with that. Like, I think people, for some reason, people forget that they also coached and helped out too. And that, you know, maybe I was like, maybe the head coach or whatever, but, you know, Sean and Amy had just as much of a positive, powerful impact on those, you know, those people as I did. Yeah, like Katie Jones, Evan, Joey, Sean, Shepard, they were just like really fun, cool people. And they're all doing cool things on their own too, which is kind of what happened with FDA. Just kind of got too, they all, you know, kind of became superstars in their own right. And was like, hey, like we're doing our own kind of passion things now. We don't really have time for this. So, I was like really proud of them for that. It's like, good. I'm glad you're all like doing so well that like this, you know, you don't need this. Like, that's awesome. Like, yeah.
They didn't want to half-ass it. They want to pull ass.
Yeah, that's projects. Right. Is that in this one or the lost one? The half-ass whole ass thing. Yeah.
That was a callback though.
Yeah. I'm Chris, in the last one that we lost, Chris said how, excuse me, I keep having to burp because of my beer, but Chris keeps talking about how he's a whole asser. that's who he is. I said it should be on his business card.
Yep,
Chris, the whole asser. And I would be Mike the asshole. But yeah, so they were a lot of fun to teach. It was also really convicting for me, like coaching them in any way, just because it was like everything. I was like, oh, hey, try this. I was like, oops, I totally did that in the last show. Dang it. Like, I would just catch little things that I would try to help them in. I was totally realizing, oh, crap, I do all this.
Yep.
And so in a way, I think it helped me be better. I learned just as much from them, I think, as they learned from me. But they are just all very naturally talented improvisers. And they have such a good, like, energy together. Like, they each have a little bit different of a sense of humor, and they each have, like, a different way of playing it. But when they all play it off each other, it's really fun and special. I think one of my favorite improv scenes I've ever done was with FDA. And it was with when we did... It was actually when Bree... Bree, I kind of forget Bree was on the team because she kind of joined later. But Bree's also really talented and really fun. But yeah, Bree, when she kind of... When they were like kind of testing her out to see if they wanted her to join, she came to a couple of practices. And we did this one where... We all remember, like, if you ask everyone at FDA, everyone totally remembers this scene. And it was, like, this crazy, had Greek mythology, like, these crazy alien cults, and it ended with this, like, it was just so much fun, and it was a long form, too. And it was just a really special game, and I've always been thankful for FDA for that. And then with Planned Parenthood, kind of right as FDA was, like, you know, all moving on. There was no bad blood. It was just people were busy and wanted to do new things. Then, you know, Planned Parenthood was like, hey, we want to coach you. So I was like, oh, okay. And made them do some of the same stuff I made FDA do. And, you know, they have different, you know, different energy than FDA did. Like, you know, because they have different people. But a lot of really fun talent in there. Like, I remember when I kind of was like, all right, this is my last session with you guys because I'm moving away. And I remember, like, taking each of them aside and telling them all, like, each what I thought was their, like, really special about them and how they performed. And then one thing I asked them each to work on. And it was all different. Like, just like FDA, like, they're all, like, really, the people in Planned Parenthood are all really talented in just different ways. I think one thing I like about coaching is you really do, like, it's something, improv is something I love. So just, I feel like I'm getting spoiled, like, with getting to watch all these different people that I really think are fun, awesome people get to do more improv. And it's like, oh, is it tiresome to have to stay late and, like, try to talk to people? It's like, no, it's like, I get to watch people do improv all day. It's great. Like, I love getting to watch people do improv, and especially when they're trying hard, and, like, and you get to watch them grow a little bit. Like, you know how, did you ever, like, work in construction? Did you ever build anything? Like, when you
built that bookshelf with my dad.
You built that bookshelf?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a nice bookshelf.
High school, I think.
Wow. But, like, it felt kind of, did it, when you were done, did it feel kind of good to, like, see the fruit of your labor? Like, oh, like, yeah. Today, like, when I got up this morning, like, this was this and this. And now, like, boom. Like, it's like, I built this. Like, this thing is here that I physically did. And it feels, you feel like you were productive, and it feels like, yeah, it mattered. And I think coaching gives you that. With improv, because you're using improv to help people. It's like, oh, like, you want to get better at this craft? Okay. Like, yeah, like, you're, oh man, they're getting good. And, like, you kind of felt like you were making a positive difference. And it was, and you could kind of see it too. You're like, oh, I remember, like, before they started doing this game, they did, and then after this game, wow, they are tight and solid, and they are, have a really, really professional, like, play. So, yeah, I like coaching because one, it calls me out and it forces me to do a better job, and I hope I do. Two, I love improv, so it's really fun just to get to be around more improv and people caring about it and people trying for it. And three, it's, you feel like you made a difference. So I think those are the three things I liked about coaching.
Thank you. That's a very thorough answer.
Thank you, Mike. That was a very long answer.
Thorough and detailed. I appreciate that.
I talk a lot. You can always interrupt me.
I'm trying to get better about not interrupting people. I've given some distance from it. I've noticed that's one of the things I don't like about myself is I can interrupt people. Not out of malice or anything. It's just I get excited about wanting to say something. And
yeah.
Especially once I have some beer.
That oh, that's
decreases
everyone.
My social aptitude.
That's all right.
What are the qualities of a good improv student?
In a real way, they're just all the things that are the qualities of a good improviser. Good teamwork skills, good listening skills, good imagination, open-mindedness, creativity, sporting spirit, you know, all the things that make up a good improviser. With student, though, it might also be a little bit important to have, this is important with improvisers too, whether you're a student or, like, more veteran, I guess. But, like, I think humility is kind of important. To be like, yeah, like, I'm willing to learn, I'm willing to listen, I'm willing to be open-minded about what this person's telling me, or to even be like, I feel like I'm on this level, but they're not up here on my level. I'm willing to drop down a little bit and get to their level so I can communicate and, like, reach and be a better teammate and friend to them. Because, like, that's kind of, you're like, when you're on an improv stage, you're really being a friend to who you're performing to and with. Yeah, if anything, that's what I've been learning, like, this last month of, you know, having nothing go your way. And, like, when you're just, like, I didn't leave my room for, like I said, a couple of days probably, except just to go to the bathroom and grab, like, walk, get some food. And, like, you just realize kind of how much you still need to grow up in a lot of ways. It's like, you get to, like, kind of sit and stew on your own faults. And it's like, man, like, there's a lot of really dumb, insensitive, selfish, stupid things I've done, like, and it's been a humbling experience, and I hope I stay this way or keep staying this way. And I think kind of humility is, like, probably empathy is the most underrated thing, but I think humility is, like, really up there, especially for our culture. Like, I I don't know how to say something real quick, because I don't know how to say what I was about to say, but it's just like, I just kind of wish people would just sometimes get over themselves a little bit.
Sure.
Especially when, you know, when everything else is like kind of falling around, it's like, guys, like, you just get over yourselves and put other people first for a little bit.
What did you have for breakfast today?
I made some easy over eggs. Yeah. I learned to cook a lot of different things. Even though I haven't really eaten a lot, I learned to cook some different meals, and I like cooking. I think cooking's fun.
Yeah, definitely.
I had easy over eggs for breakfast. I don't normally eat breakfast, actually, so it was... Weekends I tend to, but weekdays I usually don't eat breakfast. It's probably not good for me.
No, it's the most important meal of the day, right? That's what they say.
Yeah, they. Who's they? What do they know?
Big cereal.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
It's all propaganda. Yeah. Probably the least important meal of the day.
Yeah, food doesn't matter. This is propaganda by food companies trying to make you eat food.
Big orange juice. Yeah.
What did you have for breakfast?
Today I had 2 bagels with cream cheese. Everything bagels from Trader Joe's.
Nice.
And I ran out of cream cheese, so I used cookie butter.
Cookie dough?
No. I think it's called cookie butter.
Cookie butter. Sounds
from
tasty.
From Trader Joe's also.
Cookie butter and bagels.
It's just oil and sugar. Mm-hmm. It's like Nutella, but tastes like cookies.
Like, sounds like your most important meal of the day was really not that good for you.
No, but I had a hangover and...
Yeah, you need some comfort breakfast food.
Yeah, like the sweetness and the richness, the fattiness settled my stomach a bit.
Mm.
Yeah, because I don't handle adversity well, maybe? Like the,
well, the I'm not here to judge.
Of a car accident.
Yeah, yeah, it was a crazy week for you.
Yeah.
A first car accident's always like a thing, too. You always remember the first one.
How many accidents have you been in?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe like 4. The first one was, it was really simple. It was just, and yeah, like I've thankfully never gotten hurt in an accident. They mostly haven't been bad. The first one was just like, I was just turning, getting off, Fuller, off 96. And, there was just a huge pile of sand right in the middle of the turn. And I didn't like, and I just totally slid on it, you know, it's a huge thing of sand and tires were just like, whoa. So I slid and I bumped into a lady, and we just pulled right over. She was fine. There's barely a dent on her car, and a cop came and was like, yeah, you guys are like the 4th accident that's been like at this spot because of that. And then like, as we were standing there and as he was talking, we heard it was like, and we saw like another car like spin out in the sand. He was like, yeah, they got to take care of this. So that it was a very, very small, you know, dink in a car. That was my first.
Hmm.
Yours was you know, a little bit worse than that.
Yeah.
Whew. So yeah, here we are. Depressing move failures, car accidents.
What do you think?
People named Nichols who commit acts of terrorism.
That's you, man. I'm not involved.
Yeah. Well, not my family.
What do you think?
Hashtag not my Nichols.
I like that. What do you think about Carrot Top, the comedian, quote-unquote comedian?
I don't think about Carrot Top. I don't have an opinion. I don't really care. That's another thing that happened to me in the last month. Like, I just stopped caring about a lot of things. I was like, yeah, I don't really care. Like, it's not I have my own issues right now, and I'm trying to just figure out how to stay alive right now. I really don't care. It's like, oh, what do you think about this show doing this? I don't care. Like, this is not my problem anymore. Like, I'm working on my issues. I don't need to be trying to solve all the issues in the world right now. Many issues as there suddenly all of a sudden are, and it's like, what is happening to our world?
Yeah.
But
I stopped caring around November, I would say.
It's discouraging. I haven't stopped caring. I've just like tried to limit like my, because if you just like, it's just gonna keep making me more angry and more like, frustrated and afraid a little bit. But I'm just gonna like, okay, I'll sign this petition and I'll sign this petition. Like, that's like as much as I know how to do. And like, I really just need to focus on other things right now than all the political mess of the world.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know if this one's phrased very well, but relative to the style of stand-up comedy, what's the relationship between an improvised live performance and a desire for immediate gratification? And I'm thinking with that, like, you're getting the immediate feedback from the audience there.
I think improv and stand-up are different. And I think there's some similarities. Yes, you're on a stage. Yes, you're speaking or doing something. Yes, like, hopefully it's people are laughing. Although with improv, you know, the goal isn't always to make people laugh. It's just to do a good scene. If it's improv comedy, yeah, you would hope they would laugh and be entertained. But, you know, sometimes it's just as funny if they're moved, you know. It's, humor's silly like that.
Laughs are cheap. I'm going for gasps.
Yeah, but going for gasps is also kind of cheap in its own sense, too. It's like, oh, that's trying to force something, too. You should just focus on doing a good scene, and gasps or laughs or both at the same time, like, it'll happen. Just follow the improv, I like to say. Yeah, I think improv and stand-up are different, and I think it's interesting when you watch two different camps, because I wasn't ever a theater... I've done, like, a play... I've done two plays my whole life. I don't really qualify as a theater kid. And I've never done stand-up. I definitely don't qualify as a stand-up person. But a lot of my friends that do improv, like, and this was in college and in Grand Rapids, like, it either came from stand-up, people that liked stand-up and were doing improv, and people that did theater and were doing improv. And watching those two camps has been very, very interesting to watch how theater people try to, what they try to do with improv, and then watching stand-up people and what they try to do with improv. And it's very, it's subtly, there's some similarities, but it's also very subtly different. And I would say that both need to kind of recognize that they're doing that. It's like, hey, you recognize that what you're like, oh, well, like, because I've seen all these arguments and I've seen these debates and I've had to be in them too. And I wish both sides would kind of acknowledge that that's what they're doing. It's like, hey, you are approaching this in improv partly because of your stand-up background, and you are approaching this about improv partly because of your theater background. And if you're not, and like, if you're not willing to do that onus self-examination and like admission that that's kind of what's partly happening, you're always going to kind of do the same type of improv. So, I think sometimes stand-ups can try to fight for that, trying to make a joke or trying to be edgy or trying to like push for a laugh or push for a punchline or one-liners. They can sometimes do that in a scene where it's not really like appropriate or not like, hey, that's not the, I mean, they can make sure you're free, improv, you're free to do whatever you want with improv, I guess, but it's like, what's, you know, it's like, what's the energy? What's really the best choice to make here? And sometimes there's a million best choices. And that's what's so crazy and interesting about improv is that, like, sometimes there's five best things to do, and that's, like, it's just, it'll take you different places. It's like those Choose Your Own Adventure books. Mm. But then with theater kids, they sometimes will try to, they'll just try to focus on certain, like, oh, we just need the purity of this thing. Like, we'll just focus only on the purity of the character, and, like, it's like, yeah, well, what if it's, like, boring as all get out? I mean, you're on stage to be entertaining, you know, like, a little bit, especially if people are paying to come watch you. And sometimes also I tend to find that theater people can get a little bit more sensitive about improv needs to have a message, and improv must, like, you know, stand for this kind of issue politically or this kind of agenda that we want, because that's what their background is. They have a lot of agendas in their background, and stand-up people do too, but I tend to find that that's the difference. Stand-up people that come into improv tend to like try to force funny and force edginess sometimes. And theater people sometimes try to like force agenda or force like, I'm trying to think of what the right word for it is. Force a kind of theatrical nature to it. And I think both approaches can be very enjoyable and entertaining to watch sometimes, but I think like you're better off trying to abandon some of your agendas with both theater and improv and stand-up when you come to improv. Does that make sense, what I said?
Yeah, I think so.
What do you think about what I just said? Do you think I'm wrong?
I don't have enough of a experience base to know. Like, I don't know people's backgrounds that well to know if they're coming from a theater perspective or a stand-up perspective or just pure improv.
Yeah, and I mean, in a sense, improv is theater sports, but then people also latch on, well, it's improv comedy, so then it should have almost have this weird stand-up element to it, too. So, like, it definitely is an art form that is a convergence of multiple styles, and it's understanding why people in stand-up and theater get attracted to improv. And I don't mean to attack anyone by saying it. I think you can do stand-up and be great at it, and then do improv and be great at it, and I think you can do theater and be great at it, and do improv and be great at it, and I think you can do all three and be great at all three. But, you know, in terms of the different styles, yeah, I've tended to notice there are certain, like, quirks that come with the different art form that is really your favorite, kind of. So, or your one of personal preference, I guess.
All right.
Man, this is, I'm going to get so much, like, people mad at me for saying all that. I just know it.
Nobody's going to listen to it, Mike.
Oh, there we go. That's better.
You and me and probably Josh. Because Josh loves
you. Smile. Josh loves you.
I love Josh also.
I like Josh Heller too.
But he's a big fan of small, local.
Yeah. And all this is my perspective. Like I said, I have no official training. I, you know, just have my experience and you ask me a question. So
that's, Tom Hunt's going to listen too.
That's my opinion. Tom Hunt.
Yeah.
I like Tom Hunt.
He likes this. I like Tom Hunt also.
He likes you too.
Yeah. I would say love.
He loves you.
Oh, I'm not going to speak for him on that.
he's a funny guy.
Very talented. Very funny.
So what other questions do you have that I can, like, get myself in trouble with? Like,
what is comedy for you?
Something that makes me laugh.
All right. What's your ideal job?
Oh. I feel it'd be fun to kind of, like, I don't know. I think I would be best at... You got to realize, like, if you talked to me like a year ago or even 3 months ago, I would have given you a different answer. Mm-hmm. Now that, like, my life is officially broken and restarting, it's hard to know. I think I'm good at trying to encourage people and connect people with something, like... You know, like you said, I did introduce a lot of people to each other and try to make everyone friends. And I want people to all be friends. I don't like seeing people argue when I think it's needless. And when I think diplomacy is a much better way to help each other out. And I especially don't like it when it's my friends, people I care about and people who share my passions. And I'm like, I'm just watching them fight on Facebook. And I'm like, guys, like, I wish you wouldn't. It hurts. I'd like to maybe be a host of something. Like, I love watching...
Like Applebee's?
yeah. Like a restaurant. No, I love watching the Graham Norton show, and I love watching Conan O'Brien, and I, you know, used to love Jon Stewart. And I feel like I could just do that. Like, I could talk to people. Like, you know, kind of what you're doing right now is, like, you're letting other people... Excuse me. You're letting them, like, talk about things that matter, and... You're, like, getting, like, you know, you're asking fun, silly stuff, too, and it's, like, it's just a good mix. I kind of like that. I love Graham Norton because I just think it's a really funny show, and I think he's a great host. I do love watching interviewers. Like, I watch, of all the things on YouTube, I probably watch, like, interviews with celebrities, not because I'm, like, ooh, like, I really, like, want to know what's kind of celebrity world, but just because I love watching how the interview, the people that are doing the interviews, like Conan or Jon Stewart, like, I love watching how they draw information out of people and how they get them to a place where they feel comfortable talking about certain things or get them to, or give them setups to, like, hey, like, here's something where you can say your story or say something funny. Like, I love, like, analyzing that and, like, watching the psychology of it and the social interaction of it. So yeah, I think, like, maybe being a host of something would be fun and, like, getting to, like, you know, like, encourage all people to work together and have fun and, you know, keep doing, talking to people. What's up?
You're making noise with the can.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so thinking. Nervous. I'm gripping it like death grip.
What online streaming, be it Netflix or Amazon or HBO Go or YouTube or whatever,
What streaming shows are you watching?
When I was down in Austin, my sister has Netflix. And I consumed The Crown. The Crown was absolutely fantastic.
I'm not familiar with that.
The Crown is Netflix. It basically follows like the kind of early reign of Queen Elizabeth. And it was very well acted. It was, from everything I've read, pretty historically, pretty close. And it was just really interesting to watch, like how monarchy and the idea of like power kind of like what it does to people, especially in a modern world. Like, even though that's set like in the like 50s and stuff, but that was really interesting.
1950s.
Yeah.
Back in the 1900s.
Yeah. I forget. I think she became queen in 1952.
Is that the current queen?
Yeah. Queen Elizabeth. She's the longest reigning monarch right now. But yeah. So The Crown was really good. I finished up Black Mirror while I was there. Ooh. I'd already seen the first two seasons and thought it was one of the most intelligent shows on television.
Yeah.
And the third season was no exception. Powerful, convicting, terrifying.
Thought-provoking.
Oh, yeah. It's one of those shows where, like, I want everyone to watch it.
Yeah. I want more of it.
Yeah. But we need to. I think that's what I tweeted during... when Trump won, I was like, this is like the worst Black Mirror episode. And then like, I saw a lot of other people had tweeted that too. I was like, oh wow. Okay, great. Now we're all like thinking of like crap. I'm watching some of the new episodes of Always Sunny. I love Always Sunny. Always Sunny's and it's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I should say the full name.
Yeah.
Mad respect for those guys. I just watched the Neil Brennan, I think I hope I'm saying
Three Mics.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I loved that. I thought that was really, really well done.
I've been meaning to watch that. It's on my list.
What else? Oh, you know, I've been enjoying the Lemony Snickets. I used to like those, but I never finished the books because I think a person who let me borrow them didn't have them all, and I didn't get to like read the last like a couple books in the series. But I really enjoyed the books. I love that. I have a very similar sense of humor, and I could just really relate to the story in some ways. And I enjoyed it. I mean, for what it was, I enjoyed the Jim Carrey movie. Like, it was silly to me. I kind of thought it was fun. It's got Meryl Streep in it, so.
It's not nearly as dark as the new series.
Like, you know, have you been watching the new series?
I've only seen the first episode so far, but I will continue watching that.
Did you read the books?
I did not read the books.
Okay. It's pretty, yeah. I think now that the TV show format will give it more time to, like, go into all the books, which made me start thinking, like, man, if they could do this with this, like imagine in 10 years if they did, like, Harry Potter on Netflix. And, like, they did.
As a series?
Yeah, like, as a Netflix series. But they did, like, everything. Like, the movies are enjoyable, but they leave a lot of really, what I think is kind of crucial and really, like, you know, really, really hard-hitting stuff. Sometimes they leave them out of the movies. Mm. And I'm like, man, like, if they could just do this with Harry Potter, like, and Netflix could really do everything, like,
yeah,
that would be fantastic. I would never stop watching it. And if they did it right, too. They have to do it right.
Yeah.
With the right cast, right actors.
The cinematography in the Lemony Snicket, the new series, is... amazing. Like, the set design reminded me a lot of, like, a Wes Anderson movie.
Uh-huh, totally. It's,
like, very well composed.
Yeah, it does have that Wes Anderson feel. I think my favorite, I don't know if you, it might be in episode 2, but it's, I'm not spoiling anything for you, but Klaus says to him, Klaus, did I pronounce it right? The boy. He says to him, like, you will never touch our family fortune. And Count Olaf reaches over, puts his hand on Violet's shoulder and goes, I'll touch whatever I want. And I was like, oh, like, it made me so mad. And it, like, and he, Neil Patrick Harris, who I think he's doing a solid job on the role. Like, he had dropped such a funny line right before, and then to go right from this funny, like, ha ha, like, you know, it's dark. It's this dark, like, sense of humor with orphans and this kind of stuff. You know, it's got almost like a Tim Burton-y, like, gothic candy sense to it. But then just to drop that line, I was like, whoa, that really punched me in the stomach. Oh, this is good.
They're not holding back.
Nope. No, they are not. Which sometimes I think makes for better art.
Yeah.
Like, it makes it... Yeah, like, it gave me that, like, whoa. Like, it made me instantly connect and care more and, you know, feel more about it. So, yeah, props to him. It's good. So yeah, I'm not really watching this. I've been reading more. But yeah. So.
Oh, what are you reading?
I'm still working through the UCB. Like kind of this is their UCB textbook about like how to do improv. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. There's this book of poetry that I used to. It's E. Cummings, and I really like the poetry of E. Cummings. And
Cummings.
Huh.
Cummings.
Are you making a semen joke right now?
I wasn't.
But or not just semen. Semen's not the only way to come.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, that was
a very selfish male perspective.
That was. See, no, but a lot of that, I'm like, wow, like that was a stupid thing to say. Why did like why, you know,
jizz,
yeah, ejaculation, juice,
skeet,
to the windows,
to the walls,
till the sweat
drops down my balls.
Skeet, 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 skeet. I'm so glad this is the class, and this is like the intelligent show you wanted it to be.
Sure.
I apologize to everyone listening to us.
Sorry, Josh. Sorry, Tom. What are some of your favorite?
where are you going with that?
What are some of your favorite comedy movies?
Ugh. Top favorite comedy movie of all time is Some Like It Hot by Billy Wilder. Second is The Princess Bride. Third is The Birdcage by Mike Nichols.
Was that the new one with Nathan Lane and Robin Williams?
I wouldn't exactly say it's new. It came out, I believe, 1996 or 7. Oh, sorry.
Wasn't there an older one though?
It was like a French farce that I think was a play, and then they rewrote it as like a American style comedy.
Oh.
But yeah, those are my top three. Some Like It Hot, Princess Bride, and The Birdcage. And then after that, like, there's two movies. Like, I love some of the Monty Python films. I love when I was a kid, I used to love the Ernest movies, even though I think they're like, I'm sure they're stupid now if I watch them, but I it was fun for me.
Ernest Goes to Camp was one of my favorite movies as a kid.
There were so many. Like, I just kept finding that, like, we would go to Blockbuster and be like, there's a different Ernest in the Army? Like, I never even heard of Slam Dunk Ernest. When did they make these? Like, and yeah. There was, I don't remember the name of it. Is it The Three Different Flavors? It's the Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and End of the World. It's
something trilogy.
Yeah, I like those movies a lot. I think those are funny. I love. There's this great. I feel like there's two movies that I absolutely love that I feel like almost no one's heard of that they're really good comedies. One is they remade it as an American film, but the British version I thought was more enjoyable. It's called Death at a Funeral. You ever heard of it?
Nope.
It's a real. I enjoyed it. It's like a British comedy of errors about. Basically, there's a death at a funeral, and it's pretty funny. Peter Dinklage is in it, and I'm trying to think of other people who might know. The guy from Firefly, who's the pilot?
Nathan Fillion?
No, Simon.
The pilot. Is that the Steve the Pirate from Dodgeball?
Yes, he's in it. He's a guy who goes to the funeral, and he's really nervous because he's going to meet his girlfriend's family at the funeral, and... He takes some what he thinks is Valium, just calm down, and it's accidentally like this really high tripping like drug, and so he's at this funeral completely baked, and it's hysterical.
What a terrifying experience!
Another comedy movie I really love that I don't think a lot of people have seen it, but it was also kind of similarly taken from a British comedy called The Thick of It, which is like a British political like kind of farce show, just showing the inside workings of
Alan Thicke.
I don't know. Armando Dispucci, I'm going to say the name wrong. But they decided to turn it into a movie to see if like they could have fun, like if it could reach broader audiences. So they made the film, which was called In the Loop. And then they have like the British and the American like politicians trying to like say all the right things so they don't have to go to war. And then they eventually all the creative team and some of the actors even all went over and they eventually created the amazing HBO comedy Veep, which is Julia Louis-Dreyfus as the vice president. That's probably my favorite comedy show on TV right now is Veep. Veep, Always Sunny, and South Park, probably my favorite comedies on TV right now. And so, yeah, those are my favorite movies.
Nice.
There's more that I probably like. I'm just not like I love Dumb and Dumber. Yeah. You know, but I just didn't think to say it. Until, well, I did say it, so I did think to say it. See, I'm not good at this, man. I'm not good at being interviewed. I say dumb things, and I'm much better at getting other people to say
dumb things.
No.
How do you feel about drinking alcohol before a performance?
I've never done it, and you shouldn't either, kids. that's not true. I've absolutely done it. I've made quite a fool of myself, having done it before. Sometimes I've had way too much before going on. I've made very bad first impressions with people doing that. So yes, I think it's, something I would probably not encourage people to do. I think if you want to do like a team, everyone does like a team shot before they go on, or, you know, maybe that, but, I would prefer not to do it now that I'm a little older and have experienced it. And, you know, I don't, you know, some people, maybe it helps them. Some people, maybe it hinders them. Everyone's different. But for me, I would prefer not to now, because I think it does, you know, it does dilute my senses a little bit and probably makes my improv a lot cheaper.
What is the role / relationship of empathy in comedy?
Man, these are good questions.
Thank you.
Good job, Chris. I hope this isn't too long. Like, I know I talk a lot.
Josh and Tom both have extra time during the week to listen to podcasts. So I think they'll appreciate the additional content.
I personally think that empathy is the most underrated character trait in the world, particularly America right now. The ability to put yourself in somebody else's shoes, to try to look at it from their perspective, to try to not just see their point of view and really, really hear them, but also to be willing to feel their pain. To like, I want to relate to you in a way that will take some of the pain off you and experience it myself so you don't have to. And it's especially important when you're doing that with not just the people you care about and the people you agree with, but the people that you really don't care about and the people you really don't agree with. But I think that's how you make peace. There's a good line in Game of Thrones. I think it's Littlefinger who says it was. He and Ned Stark are talking. He's like, "You want me to make peace with my enemies?" And Littlefinger says to him, "We only make peace with our enemies." It's like, who else? Like, what in the world do you think making peace means? I think empathy is the real diplomatic tool you need in order to build bridges. And if you don't have empathy, if you can't relate to them, if you just always want to think of them as the them, it's them versus us. If that's going to be your attitude, you'll only get to a certain place in improv. You'll never get deeper than that. But in terms of comedy, I think it's really important to help, build those bridges. Like, you know, it's sad that his legacy is, you know, now tarnished, although it needs to be in some ways. But Bill Cosby, there were certain people that have talked about Bill Cosby's role in civil rights and how, you know, the Cosby Show in some ways gave the American public for the first time ever a chance to look at like the family life of an African-American family. And to be sure, it was a very, you know, like middle class, like it wasn't the common experience of the African-American family at that time. So there's a lot of conversation to have there, but, you know, just for what I'm saying and just for what it was, like for the first time ever, white people saw a black man on TV and they were like, "Oh, he's just like me. Oh, like he has the same problems with his kids," or, "Oh, like he's got the same problem at work," or, "Oh, him and his wife have the same conversation." And it was a weird way that I don't mean weird in like a bad way, but it was like a unique way that comedy suddenly showed people that they were all alike. You know, it's like, "Oh, like there should be white American, black American." Oh, wait, but white people and black people are kind of at their human level kind of the same. Oh.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm sure a lot of people will debate me on that or whatever, and that's fine. But I do think in some ways that helped show the American public that, hey, like we are kind of all the same. Yes, there's huge differences in social infrastructure and, you know, the economics of how, like, these races in this country are living their lives and the opportunities and stuff. But at a human level, yeah, there's things we can all relate on. And, like, Seinfeld kind of does that, like, with everyone. Like, you know, like, oh, everyone, like, kind of does this thing. And but Bill Cosby was kind of the first time people saw, oh, like, that experience with an African-American family. And I think that that created a sense of empathy. At least I hope it did. I've read people that talked about their, like, comedians who talked about that, their experience of, like, yeah, Bill Cosby changed how I saw race, or Richard Pryor changed how I saw race. I think the comedian for me was Dave Chappelle. It was watching mm-hmm. the Chappelle show and watching Chappelle stuff and realizing, like, you know, oh, like, it's so different for them. Like, it's an... And then the jokes to me, I'm like, yeah, like, but we're laughing at the exact same stuff. Like, we have the exact same sense of humor, and yet, you know, this is what's going to happen to him because he's black, and this is what's going to happen to me because I'm white. Like, oh, like, and the humor kind of was the bridge that brought in the mutual love and the mutual respect without even realizing it. And it's not, I mean, it's not like I ever, you know, hated black people or something, and Dave Chappelle shaved me from racism. I don't, you know, I'm sure we all have, you know, bits of bigotry in us. But yeah,
it's a little bit racist.
Well, yeah, maybe.
That's a song from the musical Avenue Q.
I've seen Avenue Q. Yeah. I definitely think everyone has, like, bigotry in them where they feel resentment and dislike of people just cause they are this label. And maybe there's fairness there, like, you know, but maybe there has been bad histories between races, and yet, you know, or people groups or sports teams, you know, you can put whatever it is that I don't like them because they're this, and therefore I will never like them because they're that. Yeah, sure. It's human nature. Yeah, unfortunately. But then you have something like empathy that comes along and tries to build those bridges. Like, even, yeah, they're this and you're this. Like, maybe you could find common ground in this, though, or maybe you could connect this way. And I think humor definitely has a role in that. For me, like, growing up and, excuse me, humor was kind of this way for me to kind of, like, calm everyone down. Like, in my role in the family, at least, I felt I was kind of the person that just made everyone laugh and relax. Like, you know, if my sisters were getting a fight with my parents, or if there was just this tension, and then, like, I kind of dropped in the tension, like, breaker, or I was the person that, like, tried to make a joke to make everyone laugh just to calm everyone down. Like, I just kind of felt that becoming kind of who I was as a kid. So I like humor that does self-deprecation, because it kind of gives everyone an even footing of, hey, no one's perfect, guys. Like, you know, yes, they have their issue, but, you know, you have your issues too. Maybe their issues are worse, but, you know, we're all people that have issues.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of distracts from whatever the fight is about, just to kind of refocus and look at yourself in the mirror for a second. Or it's a way just to get them to not laugh at it, to not be angry at each other, and just to laugh at you for a minute. Yeah. And that gives them, like, oh, they both thought that was funny, and now I'm the target. They're not each other's target. So, yeah, that was, like, I definitely think that humor has a lot to do with empathy, especially with building bridges. One of my favorite stand-ups is Russell Peters. Mm. You like Russell Peters?
Yeah, I just watched an episode of Speakeasy, Paul F. Tompkins' YouTube series, and Russell Peters was the guest.
Yeah, his stand-up's really fun. But it's also really amazing how, like, diverse the audience is, and all the different cultures that he can go into and speak to and joke around with and tease and play with. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, man, like, I feel like that's one of the most diverse crowds of people to watch a stand-up show I've ever seen than, like, a Russell Peters audience. Like, that's really cool. And a lot of those people, like, you know, nationally or politically, they might not all get along, but Russell Peters, they can all identify and relate with, and they all think he's funny. Mm-hmm. And, like, the jokes that he, you know, teases them with or plays them with, like, they, you know, they know they're not being attacked. Like, it's just friendly teasing. It's that kind of cultural, like, family, like where siblings rib each other a little bit because they're different, but, you know, he does it in a way that never feels like it's harmful or like it's really gonna keep anyone down or leave a touch that hurts for too long. So I like the way Russell Peters uses empathy and humor. I think that's a good example of, like, cross culture relevancy of it. And I have talked for way too long about this issue.
You are rambling.
Sorry.
Don't apologize to me. Apologize
to Tom and to
Josh.
To Josh. Yeah. Sorry, Tom. Sorry, Josh.
Thank you. On their behalf. Would you like to be famous? Why or why not?
No. I'd like enough fame to have opportunity to do what I want, not enough fame to get, like, stopped all the time and have paparazzi following me and then have, like, you know, I tweet one thing that I just mean is, like, a little weird thing I thought and then, like, you know, half the country's mad at me demanding I apologize or something, you know, like, I don't want that kind of fame. But, like, enough fame to be, like, at whatever art I end up with, like, with the rest of my life or to just be respected. And to be, like, accepted in my professional, like, field, that would be nice.
What's more important to you, the acceptance of your peers or the acceptance of the audience?
That depends. It depends on why your peers aren't accepting you and why the audience is, or why the audience isn't accepting you and your peers are. Yeah, I don't think I can pick. I don't know. What made you ask that? I don't think I've ever heard anyone ask that question before.
I don't know. It was improvised.
Really? Oh, Chris, making me proud.
What is your favorite food?
Like five foods just came into my head at the same time. Like I just saw a plate with all of them on it.
What are they?
Manicotti, corn on the cob, spaghetti and meatballs, and oh man, this is tough. Like some kind of combination of olives and dill pickles.
Hmm. Like a tapenade? But...
Yeah. Not hot dogs, Al. Yeah. I got teased a lot because I ate a lot of hot dogs, apparently. I feel like a lot of journalists do. I've heard of other journalists. Yeah, I would just always like have a hot dog, right? Because it's like a quick, like, filling little bite to munch on while you just need to get somewhere. And Al would always, like, he's got so many hot dogs in the fridge. And then Kristen Hirsch came over once and, like, was like, why does he have all these hot dogs? And, like, her and Al got in this whole, like, Mike eats too many hot dogs thing. Like, yeah. I think 4th of July, I, like, actually sent, like, a whole video of me just, like, eating hot dogs, like, to Kristen. I was like, hey, happy 4th of July. Hope you, Zach, and the boys are having a great time. Oh, and by the way, and I was, like, kept shoving hot dogs in my face.
Or corn. Are you more of a sweet corn guy or, like, the savory corn?
Ah, the savory. Yeah, like the milky, like sweet, now from a can, no thanks. I like corn on the cob or like that, like something that seems like it was taken off corn on the cob. That's like nice and buttered with a little salt on it, maybe some seasoning. Getting hungry now.
What is your favorite kind of cookie?
My favorite kind of cookie? Mm-hmm. Probably an, ooh, boy. My instinct says Oreo. Like, just have some nice Oreos with some milk. But I do love those Elf fudge cookies, too. Like, if those are in the house, like, they go fast. Like, I don't mean to. I just, like, they're so good. Like, they're addictive.
Yeah, by design.
By design.
What are your go-to pizza toppings?
Pepperoni, sausage, olives.
All at the same time?
No, those three.
I don't know why I had just a clump of food questions. when people ask for a one-word suggestion for an improv scene, what's your favorite word to give?
Oh, to give?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, I don't always... If I go to an improv show, like, I don't always shout out, like, because I just... I want to let the... Like, I feel like, oh, I know what's going on. Like, I want to let the audience, like, do it. I kind of feel like I'm a... Like some kind of weird colleague or something. Maybe a hard word. Like iridescent. Like a word. Do you know what that word means? Yeah. Yeah.
But it's like shimmery, kind of colorful.
Kind of, yeah. It's like a. Like it's like all the colors of the rainbow, like in kind of one like shimmer.
Those, what are the shells? There's some. Like a seashell that's.
Uh huh. Well, like gasoline or the aurora borealis or you know, like light coming through a prism, or rainbow. Yeah, like a word that's a little bit trickier, like iridescent, verdurous.
Verdurous?
Yeah, means very green, which is my favorite color, as you remember.
Lincoln Green.
Mm-hmm. I mean, well, if anyone should be asked that question, it's you. You're the big, like, improv fan in the city. What's your favorite thing to yell out?
I don't have one yet.
Well, I can say what my least favorite things are.
Okay.
Bathroom. Penis. Vibrator. Orgasm. Dildo. A smaller stage.
Because it would fit on the stage.
Yeah, a location that would fit. A smaller stage. Yeah, I don't like those.
I thought they were funny as an audience member.
I also got really sick of any suggestions that had to do with me. It was like, Mike's day at work. Like, the business journal. Like, I got really sick of that kind of stuff. It's like, guys, like, can we do something that's not about me, please?
Where do you see the improv comedy scene in Grand Rapids 5 years from now?
I think the comedy project will hopefully be open by then, and
I think they're aiming for this year.
Are they? That'd be cool. I think it'll have more stuff. Like, there'll be more venues that are more receptive to, like, oh, like, improv is here on Tuesday nights, or improv is here on Mondays. I think there'll be more people that will have experience in the city with it, so people will be more familiar. Because, you know, the more people that take, like, you know, workshops with Griff, or they take the classes at Rapid Delivery at Civic, there's just more improv in the community. And there's also someone who does improv, like, with businesses. Like, they do improv. And I tried to connect. I wanted to just have lunch with them, just to, like, you know, talk improv with someone.
Yeah.
So I think the city will have a lot more familiar ground with improv. And I also think there'll be new energy, you know, new kids that come to a college here, or people that move here, that'll be, you know, like, oh, like, hey, this person's new, and that's cool. Just like we had with Calm, like, people would move and then they'd show up at improv and like, oh, hi, you just moved here? Cool. Like, check it out. So there'll be, I don't think all the groups that we have now will all still be the same. Like, I think some groups will have, you know, done their thing and people are doing other projects, you know, like FDA or something, like, you know, they'll all be, like, Evan's in Chicago now. You know, so FDA doesn't really exist kind of anymore. So I think that'll happen with some groups. I think there'll probably be new leadership in some areas. I think some people will leave and go to other cities where maybe they feel they have more opportunity. Overall, though, I think there's probably going to be more opportunities to do it. And I think there's going to probably be, like, an official base and community for it. That process might get a little tense because some people will feel like they want to be part of something and maybe they won't get to be, or they'll feel like they don't like certain directions maybe certain leaders are taking, and you know, there's gonna be drama because it's people doing it. I think that's gonna cause some tensions, but overall I think it's gonna be in a much more professional space than it is now. There's going to be more opportunities to do professional improv, learn professional improv, and see professional improv. That's what I think it's going to be in 5 years.
All right. Well,
at least that's what my hope is. I want it to be good. I want everyone to be successful, and I want people to find out where they belong. I don't want it to go bad for anyone. I don't want people to have any tension. So I hope it's really good. People deserve it to be good.
Well, that concludes the interview portion of the Grand Cast. We hit 94 minutes.
Wow. I'm so sorry.
No. Don't be sorry. It's a lot of quality content for Josh and Tom to listen to.
I liked your parts. Like I said, I don't think you're doing yourself any favors by having, like, one of the... someone who's not doing anything with improv now coming and doing stuff here. But
you're just on a hiatus.
No.
Speaking of hiatus, this is where we take a short break.
Okay.
Then we'll come back and we'll do the mini segments.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Oh, I haven't had time to set up the transition. There's supposed to be a musical transition as we go into break. So if you could please do some sort of musical
thing to take us into the break and then ring the bell when you feel you've concluded your musical performance. So I know to hit the stop button.
Sure. You've been listening to the Grand Cast. Now it's time for the last segment of the show. And now we have to go, so we'll be back.